It's really a dream trio today for Inside Coverage. And we're going to do something that we love to do on the show. We're going to do what nobody else does. We're not going to yell and scream. We're going to tell you that two things can be true at once for some of the biggest stories in the NFL. We're about to get to it because it is time for Zero Blitz.
Fantasy football season is here, and for the first time ever, Yahoo Sports and NBC Sports are teaming up to give you a chance to win $1 million. Entering is simple. Sign up for a private Yahoo Fantasy Football League and draft your team. If any of the players you start scores a touchdown in the Week 1 games on NBC and Peacock, you'll earn bonus entries into the sweepstakes. Each person can earn up to 8 entries, one just for signing up and up to 7 more for touchdowns scored in the 3 games. Deadline for entries is September 5th. Visit yahoo.com/fantasymillion to join and enter. Happy draft season.
All right, we got so much business to get to. We are at the beginning of Zero Blitz. He's Frank Schwab, she's Jory Epstein, I'm Jason Fitz. But before we get to any of the fun here, a couple of things. I've got some news I got to get to for the company. Before we do that, Jory hasn't been with us for a few weeks. So Jory, how much, on a scale of 1 to 10, how much did you miss Frank?
Oh, okay. So you caught me off guard without asking the question of both. I'll go solid 9.
Okay. Ah, I'll take it. Yeah.
How much did you miss being on the show? Much, yeah.
How much did I miss being on the show? Let's go 11. I never give you guys 10 for being on the, for like how the show went. So I feel like you guys deserve a little bit of extra today. Or C-Mac, maybe I'm just coming back really refreshed and everyone's getting a curve.
Frank, you, I cheated on you with C-Mac because you've been like, Frank and I at this point, we're swingers, I guess. We're in an open relationship because every time I turn around, one of us is working with somebody else. But C-Mac was on the show last week. And Jory, I told C-Mac that you never give us a 10 for your appearances. He gave me a 10. He said that you're grading too high.
Over.
Yeah, he really sucks up a lot. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know that I'd buy that, but we'll try to get Jordan on board.
Did you ask him about
10.
The time that he ate 89 McNuggets in an
My
hour?
God.
Because Frank and C-Mac discussed that on a recent podcast, and I still think about that most days.
How long did it take him to do 89?
I think an hour. Hour?
That's a solid, what, 1 1/3 nugget every minute? Like, quick math. I mean, that's
a lot of hot mustard sauce right there. I'll tell you that.
You can't sauce that many nugs. Like, there's no way.
No, you just gotta go. You just gotta eat. Yeah, you just gotta eat. You don't got time. Yeah.
All I'm saying is, next time you guys have C-Mac on the pod or listeners tweet at him, ask him about this because I think it needs more publicity than it's getting.
Jory, have you eaten 89 chicken nuggets in your life?
Ooh, that's a good question. I would say yes. When I was little, I could still eat everything. And my brother and I used to like split the McNuggets package. And then it'd be like, instead of getting like 4 for 1 and 5 for the other, it's like, what if we get 20 for the two of us? Then we go crazy. So yeah, it was great.
I'm proud of you. All right. So we have some news and notes to get to for the company real quick. I don't know if you guys want to do a drum roll, but feel free if you want here. There we go. I mean, Frank didn't participate.
It's fine,
Frank.
I have nothing in front of me. Hit my laptop a few times. I don't think Brett would be excited.
You could do like the whole
Christmas
vacation. Like you. Anyway, Zero Blitz is changing. All right, this is today is actually officially the last Zero Blitz because what we're about to become is Inside Coverage. Now, if you like me, Frank, Jory, C. Rob, you can keep getting this show on this feed, or you can subscribe to the Inside Coverage feed on its own feed starting next week. So you can still stick with us here and you can get the NFL. The feed's going to keep getting all the great NFL podcasts from Yahoo Sports, including this one and some new ones. We got some big announcements coming around the corner that you guys are going to be massively pumped about. But what you really need to know is you could stick here and get all of the shows, or you can just follow Inside Coverage. As we go into the fall, we will all be working, me, Frank, Jory, C. Rob, on Inside Coverage throughout the course of the week. So, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, I will just tell everybody involved in this is an exciting time because it means new pods, and new pods means growth, and we're really proud of what we're doing here at Yahoo, Frank. So like, this feels like the next step.
Very good, very good. Yes, all I know is, as long as they don't take away the opportunity for me to yell and scream stupid things on podcasts, I'm fine. Whatever the name is, it's going to be the same fun content, good times. Yeah, it's great. It's good, right? Like, yeah, I'm excited for everything there is to come in this upcoming football season.
Jory,
yeah,
I feel like
you go for it.
No, go, please.
We've got some new bosses and new great direction, and it's exciting to see how intentional everything is. So definitely worth sticking around and listening.
I've decided, as Frank talks about yelling and screaming, that if me, Frank, Jory, and C-Rob were a boy band, like, look, C-Rob is definitely the cool one. Like, there's no doubt C-Rob's the cool one.
Too cool for school.
Jory is kind of the nerdy one. Every boy band had a nerdy one. Frank is one of the lead singers, but like he also doesn't really like a lot of the press. And I'm the one that's like one step out of rehab the whole time. People are like, I don't know if he's going to make it. It seems like he's wired. Like this is, I've boy banded us, I think, very effectively.
There's so much to unpack here, and I love all of it.
That was really good.
I think we need to text C. Robbins, get his thoughts on this.
I mean, he's definitely the diva of the boy band, though, right? Like, there's no doubt about it.
100%.
Right? He is the Justin Timberlake of this boy band. He will be front and center, which makes, you know, Frank at that point sort of JC, right? Frank's the other lead singer. That's good. All right, I'll end my. I guess that makes me AJ from the Backstreet Boys. Like, everybody always thought that AJ was just gonna, you know, one step out of. Okay. Anyway, now let's get to some NFL news and notes. Now that I've meandered long enough through the beginning of this, and let's start with the big story everybody's talking about. Jory, Brandon Ayuk has made a trade request. So let's just the very basic here. How real does this feel to you?
Yeah, it's funny. I was reaching out to some sources around the league yesterday when this broke, and I was kind of like, is it just me, or do the 49ers have more trade requests than the entire league combined? It just feels like there is always someone out of San Francisco requesting a trade. And so I was asking people, I'm like, how much is this? They actually have more. How much is it that trade requests happen all the time and we don't usually hear about it, but for some reason in San Francisco, it's a little more public, or what am I missing? And I think, one, I will say, I definitely talked to some executives who said that they've had trade requests that just didn't become public the way that these San Francisco ones seem to perennially become public. The other thing I'll note is you have some teams where it's like they'd be so happy to have a problem like that with like a good player who wants a contract and is begging for it, but they don't have that degree of talent. San Francisco consistently year after year has a ton of talent, which means you got to pay a ton of talent, and then someone's getting paid but someone's not. And so there's more of a, hey, we know that there's not enough pie to go around for everyone and we want to do something about it. So I think that's where this is coming from. It also, he can request a trade. He still doesn't have the right to just leave while he's under contract. So do I think this is real? I mean, I think he wishes there were more in terms of the negotiations going on. But I think that it doesn't really matter what he wants on its face, because this is a 49ers question and they have the power here.
Yeah, I mean, I always say, like, everybody freaks out when they hear trade requests. Like, oh, where is he going? He's got to go. Just because you put in a trade request doesn't mean you're going to get traded. And I think that's specifically what's happening here. 49ers probably listened to his agent and said, cool, your trade request has been heard and you're not going anywhere. I mean, if there was, if I was, you know, me and Fitz, we dabble. If I was setting a line on this, I would say the 49ers are like minus 400 to have Brandon Ayuk on opening day. Yeah, somebody could come along and just offer them the moon, right? Like at that point, San Francisco would say, oh, well, okay, sure. Like that would make sense. They're a Super Bowl team. Brandon Ayuk is one of their, what, five best players. I don't think that they win a Super Bowl without Brandon Ayuk this season. And Brandon Ayuk is getting paid $14.1 million. It's not like he's just going to skip town and not play football. So he doesn't have any leverage. The 49ers probably do not want to trade Brandon Ayuk and get nothing in return for this season. You're going to get draft picks that are in 2025, which great, but doesn't help you for this season within your Super Bowl window. So I think they just sit down to Brandon and say, look, I know you're not happy you didn't get an extension. That stinks. The best thing for both of us, you ball out, we win a Super Bowl, we'll figure out what happens next offseason, or they could still franchise them and make things really uncomfortable. But I just don't see there being any other realistic way out of this situation other than, hey, Brandon, we're sorry you're unhappy, but you got to play for us this year, and let's try to win a Super Bowl together.
To that point, guys, one of my favorite games in life to play is the shoes on the other foot. And I think right now, for every fan that sits there and says, well, Ayuk wants out, put yourself in the 49ers' shoes, because, Frank, you make such an important point here. The window is today, right now, for the San Francisco 49ers. It's not 1 year, 3 year, 5 years down the road. They, frankly, shouldn't give a damn about what the future looks like. They should only care about one thing, trying to figure out a way to finally get that Super Bowl that they've been so close to. There is absolutely nothing that they can get in return right now for Brandon Ayuk that's going to make them more capable today of winning a Super Bowl this year. And when you actually put that logic to it, you see that he can request whatever he wants. People in hell want ice water too. It doesn't mean you're going to get it. So he can ask for the trade all day.
Do you know this from
but if
experience?
I'm the 40, yeah, no, 100%. I got a phone that people text me all the time. He can ask for it. But if I'm the 49ers, I'm like, thank you so much. I appreciate your request. We'll take it into consideration and we'll see you at practice tomorrow.
And one of the terms I least like in the sporting realm is, well, they're going to let him walk and get nothing in return. What the Brandon Ayuk for the 2024 season and the 1,500 yards he's going to put up or whatever it's going to be, that is something. There's value in that. Let's not act like just because you don't get draft picks when he goes and signs with the Titans or whoever, it doesn't mean you got nothing. You got the 2024 season out of Brandon Ayuk. There's a lot of value in that. And again, if I'm the 49ers, to just say, look, we'll figure it out next offseason with you, Brandon, but you're not going anywhere unless somebody comes along and offers 3 first-round picks, which nobody's going to do. So I just –
But, Frank, even if they did, I wouldn't take it. You can give me 3 first-round draft.
Oh, 3 first – yeah, I'd probably go for that. But, I mean, I'm saying in a realistic offer, nobody's going to offer you what you want. And, I mean, it's just – it kind of is what it is. Now, the one thing – I will say this, and I don't know what Jory thinks of this. The one concern you have is Brandon Ayuk is unhappy and doesn't play well. We might have saw that with T. Higgins last year. And all of a sudden, week 7, you have a minor hamstring injury, and it's like – no, you guys didn't extend me. You guys didn't trade me. I'll see you in a few weeks. I'm not risking myself. You can't come across that where guys are unhappy. They're not going to maybe, and I'm not trying to question Brandon Ayuk's professionalism or anything like that. I'm just saying you see it where guys are unhappy and all of a sudden it just the chemistry is bad and you're not really all in for this team you're playing for, even though you're getting $14.1 million to do so. That is the one concern. That's the only concern the 49ers have is that Ayuk's head isn't really in it because his feelings have been so hurt over this. And I get that too. Like he's seen guys making $30 million a year twice. He's earned that. He is one of the best receivers in the NFL, period. But at the end of the day, you just got to kind of play through it and try to get the bag next offseason.
Right. And I think that this is one of the reasons that the NFLPA says, hey, what's the deal with this rookie wage scale? And can we eventually change it? Because Brandon Ayuk is this classic example of, technically, his rookie contract, as it was when he was drafted and when he first signed it, has run out. He's played the 4 years. He was a first-round pick. He got that. But then the Niners pick up the fifth-year option. So now he'll play this year on the fifth-year option. Well, they can still franchise tag him twice. So they have control for 3 more years. Now, will they use that? Will it get more expensive? The irony of it is because the receiver position has gotten so expensive, it actually might not be a bad financial decision to do the franchise tag, but you have to take the cap hit, and you also have to realize that a guy's not going to be happy, and how long can you live with that for? Brandon Ayuk will not make the most money in 2025 by being mad this year. But like you said, there are some emotions. I also think we need to just like keep in mind and say the obvious, which is that if the 49ers do not have Brandon Ayuk on their roster in 2025, it's not because he's not a great player. It's because, one, they already paid a receiver in Deebo Samuel a lot of money. Two, they have premium guys that they paid, like Nick Bosa, Charvarius Ward. And three, they're about to have to pay a quarterback. If Brock Purdy continues on the trajectory this year that he has shown us the last couple of years, they're going to need to pay the guy, and that's going to be super expensive. And without even getting into the quarterback contracts, which always take up a huge percentage of the salary cap, I was looking at where Brandon Ayuk stands in terms of his cap percentage this year, which is a little bit of like, those numbers are always shaky because there's cash. There's what's your cap hit this year. There's what's the average life of your deal. But this year, he's going to count for $14.1 million against the cap, which is also his salary. The whole fifth-year option will count, which is the fifth highest on the team. So he's not making like the million, $2 million, $3 million that he would have on his initial rookie deal. And the only teams that have two receivers making more than him are the Seahawks and the Bears. Well, the Bears have a rookie quarterback, so they're not paying the quarterback that money. The Seahawks are kind of an in-between situation because they have Gina, who's not paying top dollar, but he is getting a veteran salary. But I think that when you understand the dynamics, it's not that crazy that the Niners aren't paying him, but also they've shown an ability to get a lot of these deals done like later on during training camp, just before the regular season. So it wouldn't shock me if they do come to some sort of agreement.
Let me ask you this. What do you think a realistic, not a pipe in the pipe dream, what's a realistic trade offer that somebody would actually give up for Ayuk at this point?
See, it's a good question, and I'd have go back and look at it. But I think the bigger thing is, to me, it's less about just his value and more about why are they giving it up? Like, obviously, Washington is a team that has made a lot of headlines in terms of could they want him. He's really good friends with Jaden Daniels. They need a receiver. But them having the salary cap space to do that doesn't mean that they are in the cycle of their – their team building life cycle, I don't think they are at a place where it makes sense to shell out for a receiver now. So to me, there's the cost of it, but there's also, does this actually make sense for a team? And is that a 1 year decision or is that a 3 year decision?
I just look back because I just thought of Devontae Adams. It's not apples to apples, but it's pretty close. And the Packers got a first and a second for Devontae Adams. That seems fair to me. That seems right. Like if you were to trade for Brandon Ayuk, you would say, first is probably a little light because Brandon Ayuk's better than your normal first round pick. First and a second probably seems to fit there. Now, the problem with that is you look at a team like the Commanders, who are going to come up a million times in this because just the Jaden Daniels connection and all that. The Commanders drafted second overall this year. They're going to be better this year, especially if they get Brandon Ayuk. But are Commanders really giving up their first round pick next year and worrying it's going to be in the top five again? I don't know that they do that. So it's going to be, it would be very complicated, but I think realistically it's a first and a second. Same as Devontae. They're both equal, not equals, but similar players at this point in their careers. So I would say first and second. And if I'm the Commanders, I do consider that. Why not? Like, I know that they're a rebuilding team and all this. Brandon Ayuk helps you a ton. Maybe I've just drinking the Matt Harmon Kool-Aid too much on Brandon Ayuk. He's been a Matt Harmon favorite for a long time, our colleague. But I think Brandon Ayuk is legitimately within the top 15 receivers in the NFL, maybe the top 10. And a guy like that would help Jaden Daniels so much that it's worth the picks. But yeah, I get it. These teams giving up those kind of picks it's hard, especially for a rebuilding team.
I think that's the biggest confusion I have of the way this all goes down. Because in my mind, giving up a first and a second makes a ton of sense if you're in a Super Bowl window and you think Brandon Ayuk is the guy that puts you over the top. Problem is, when I look at teams in the Super Bowl window and I ask, well, who would want to give up a first and a second for Brandon Ayuk? The answer to that doesn't appear to be the Bills. Like, they've told you pretty clearly they don't think they need that. The answer to that isn't the Dolphins. The answer to that isn't the Bengals right now. The answer to that isn't the Ravens. Like,
I got one for you. One for you, Fitz.
Who?
The Detroit Lions, who have the third most effective cap space right now. So you could pitch this to Brett. Look, I get it's a little crazy, but you're the Detroit Lions. You're finally in a Super Bowl window. Why not get a little bit crazy? You pitch Brandon Ayuk on, we're not going to give you a long-term deal, but we'll give you a raise. We'll give you $25 million this year. But that'll make you happy for a year, won't it? And you just figure it out in the offseason. After that, like, I think if you're YOLO and you're the Detroit Lions and you really don't have a number two receiver, Jameson Williams is there. I like his potential, but he hasn't done it yet. He's a different type of receiver than Brandon Ayuk, obviously. If you tell me that a team is going into the season with Amon-Ra St. Brown, Brandon Ayuk, and Jameson Williams and Sam Laporta in your passing game, I like that a lot. And I don't care what you give up in the future if it's even for a one-year rental. The Houston Texans just did it for Stephon Diggs, and they changed his contract to make it just 1 year. Why would it be that much different if the Detroit Lions did it? Now, I don't know that the 49ers would necessarily be like, sure, we'll give Brandon Ayuk to the Detroit Lions, a team that should have beat us in the NFC Championship game. But we're getting crazy, right? We're talking about what would be the most fun. What Super Bowl contender should just be like, we don't care about these picks in the future. We want to win this year right now. The Detroit Lions had the cap space to get this really, really interesting.
Frank, you make such a good point, because I think sometimes I think about this as, oh, well, they're not just giving up the picks. They also have to have the cap space over the course of the next few years. But you're right. Stephon Diggs and the Texans, they made this into a one-year deal. They said, let's reassess. They said, let's go chase this window. Because I was actually surprised when you said the Lions have that much cap space. But I think it's because even though they're doing these extensions, they're not taking the big hit of them now. So I don't know that in 2-3 years, they'll still have enough cap space to get Ayuk where they want to, unless they're just doing a lot of funny money and voidable years and all of that. But if they were able to do a Stephon Diggs type thing, I think it'd be a great move for the Lions. I also do not anticipate the San Francisco 49ers going for that.
That's the fly in the ointment,
so to speak.
The reason
the 49ers want Ayuk, it would be the exact opposite of, like, that's the exact reason why they should not give him to the Lions.
Yeah, exactly. No, the Lions call
Commanders
and they just say not
probably
you
aren't coming for them this year, so there's a lot less of a risk. Yeah, but, like, think about even the Titans and the Eagles, who aren't, like, direct competitors, but seeing what A.J. Brown did, and, I mean, people lost jobs over that. So when you think about that in the conference and you just played each other, advanced in the playoffs.
Yeah, that ain't happening. It ain't happening. All right, so training camp is around the corner, and we're going to get some training camp questions in. But first, let's have a real conversation. Jory, you are prepping your training camp tour at this point. You guys always get, they get the cool job, Frank. Like, Jory and C-Rob both get to go around to all the different training camps, hang out. Is there a city that you, like, other than Dallas, because you covered them so long, is there a city that you're like, ooh, I can't wait to go to training camp here? Is there one city that's best?
Well, the funny thing is, I'm not actually going to Dallas because while I visit the Cowboys, they'll be out in California. Yeah, I mean, in terms of cities, not rather than teams, where the Cowboys do go, which is Oxnard, California, and it's right by Ventura, it's awesome out there. I mean, obviously the beach, the weather, the sunsets. I'm told the sunrises are good. I can't say I'm usually awake for them. But I would say that it's just like, I kind of have my routine there, like Juliet Starbucks, and like, here's where I run on the beach, and like, here's where I do this. And so there's definitely some nostalgia for me there. But I'm also excited that in addition to hitting a bunch of the stops I went last year, like, there's some places I'm going this year that I've never, like Pittsburgh. I've never been to Pittsburgh, the city. I've never visited the team for a game, and I've never visited for a practice. Green Bay, I've been for a game, but I was covering the Cowboys element of that game at the time, and I haven't really gotten to be around that team. So Detroit, never been to the state of Michigan, never been around the Lions much, other than when they were playing another team. So there's definitely a lot of places I'm excited to explore. And honestly, for me, like, one, I'm boring on the food front, but two, I'm just like, there's so many great storylines at all these places. And hey, I'm the nerdy one in the boy band, so don't roll your eyes, or do, but like, no, you're going to have to continue to roll your eyes. That I'm just really excited to be able to be like, how do we go tell those awesome stories and bring them to our audience, to our readers, to our listeners, all of that.
And by the way, not for nothing, I'm listening to you talk about the cities you've never been to, and I'm thinking, got drunk there, got drunk there, got drunk there. Like, our boy band identities are really working. I mean,
man, I was like, had some nights in Detroit, I'll tell you.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. Michigan in general. Boy, that place can party. And Frank, is there like a training camp that you get super stoked for?
Not really. I mean, I did. I mean, training camp to me, like, I don't want to pour water on Jory's excitement here, but training camp stinks. Like, it is such long days. And this just comes from mostly going back to my beat reporter days doing the Broncos, when you were just out there forever and you just want something interesting to happen and it doesn't. Training camp, like, for a fan going to training camp, I've always said this, for a fan going to training camp, it is maybe the best experience in sports. You're really close up.
Such great access.
Such great access. You're close. It's free. You just get to go spend a day watching these guys really, really in a setting you're never going to see them in another time. NFL training camp is one of the coolest fan experiences you can have. If you are anywhere near an NFL training camp, go. It is so cool if you've never been. But for somebody who's there every single day, you get a couple weeks in and you're just like, can I have anything else to write about other than this seventh round rookie who's likely to get cut? And you just, so no, training camp doesn't get me fired up. I've been to the Cowboys one, is awesome. I bet that it really is a cool setting there. Packers is awesome just because of the city and the town I know so well. Broncos training camp is very cool. It's just at some point, like, I'm done with training camp about a week into it, and you still got, it feels like you got like months left to go before even preseason starts.
Yeah, when I'm looking at all like the 3-hour drive, 5-hour drive, 4-hour drive between cities, I'm like, oh, good luck to me. But Frank, I do want to know, are you excited for like the city of Denver being like, what the heck is Sean Payton doing with our quarterback position?
There is so, like, every year, like, Denver is one of your typical NFL cities where the NFL team just takes over everything. It's starting really with last year, maybe at the middle of the Hackett Wilson first season. The apathy in Denver is just at an all-time high, if that makes any sense. All-time low, all-time high, whatever it is.
Yeah.
I've never seen Broncos fans be apathetic, and now they are. And it's just like, getting anybody, like, nobody's walking around town going, Bo Nix, huh? Yeah, we're really fired up. No, nobody. Everybody's just kind of like beaten down by everything that's happened in the post Peyton Manning era. So I can't say that there's a lot of like, ooh, wow,
a Quinn Broncos Miners season, extension other than, didn't move the needle for you guys. Nah,
didn't really get people excited out here. And I've always, like, when they traded for Russell Wilson, that was the most excited I've ever seen Broncos fans, because they just thought, oh, it's lifting, we're gonna have a great team. And they just got the Lucy and the football from that so bad that I just don't think they've bounced back yet.
Well, one of the people everybody's excited to see at training camp in general is Drake May. So let's have a little mini Drake May training camp conversation. We'll start by just surveying the room here. When do you think Drake May is going to start, Frank?
I don't think until November. I really, and I'm never that guy. I'm never that, oh, you got to sit for a year or whatever, whatever. But I just think in this particular situation, with the new coaching staff, and you have a reliable veteran in Jacoby Brissett, I just don't see that. What's the upside in starting Drake May sooner rather than later? I think you could get competent quarterback play for a bad team who's not much around the quarterback position on that side. So I just think Drake May is one of the rare top five quarterback picks who should sit most of the year, if not even all of the year. I just don't. What's the point? What's the point putting him out there in a bad situation?
I'm annoyed because Frank went first, and I literally right before he said that in my head thought November. But so I don't know if that's good that we're on the same page or just bad content. But I do think that while there will be a lot of like, oh my gosh, did you see that throw at training camp against no defense and no pass rush, Drake May hype during training camp, it would be almost irresponsible for the Patriots to start him in September. Think about where he is in his development progression. Think about where he is in terms of coming to the NFL, and think about the supporting cast that he has around him, or better yet, doesn't have around him. I think that you really need to make sure that the team can support him, or else you're going to ruin your quarterback, and you can't afford to take a guy top three and not give him a chance at an NFL career. Now, a lot of guys in the first round do bust, but you have to at least give him a chance to succeed. You also happen to have one of the better backups. Like, I trust Jacoby Brissett to be good enough that you keep morale up. You want a quarterback who is good enough that the defense still keeps fighting hard, which, to Jerod Mayo's credit last year, and obviously Belichick deserves credit too, they fought last year even when the quarterback situation was kind of a disaster. And Brissett, like, he knows what he's doing. But I just, if they start Drake May week one, or honestly, even like early October, I feel like that will be way too early.
So here's the one interesting thing to me about Drake May. I was thinking about this. We were down in Jacksonville, you know, for Rivals, for their top 100 camp a couple of weeks ago. And I got to spend a little time with Mac Jones, who, in talking to Mac, was really very open about how refreshing it was to be at Jacksonville and just be in a different environment. And we talked a lot about how you got to get the right spot with the right people. There's so much that goes into that. But it had me thinking about Drake, because I'll make the argument that the failures of Mac Jones is actually going to help Drake May be successful, because you never want to be the guy that replaces the guy. And so no matter what Jerod Mayo does at this point, it's not going to be enough for Belichick. Just like Alabama is not going to have, like, there's just no way you replace Saban. There's a part of me that looks at this and says, maybe the best thing that could have happened to Drake is that someone everybody saw how bad it could. Yeah. I mean, Mac Jones just falls apart. And now everybody says, hey, we got to be patient, because people freaked out. Mac had one good year, and everybody's like, running around like Kermit the Frog saying he's going to be the next great thing, right? Like, that didn't work. So I think it creates more wait and see. It creates more patience. It creates more development. It creates less pressure. Like, I believe the failures of Mac Jones have actually, Jory, given Drake May a better shot at having a successful career.
Yeah, it's such an interesting case study, because you talk about the failures of Mac Jones, and then think how differently Chicago went, where Justin Fields wasn't a failure, but he wasn't quite good enough to get it. And so while Justin Fields was trying to figure out if he was a franchise quarterback, and Chicago's front office was trying to figure out whether to extend him, they were building and building, and look at the team they've created around it. And when I look at the difference, particularly on offense, but really across the teams, in what Chicago did during that last rookie quarterback that didn't work out before their current one versus the Patriots, you kind of wonder, like, why does New England's roster seem so talent deficient relative to Chicago's?
Absolutely. By the way, real quick, you talked about not being the guy or replacing the guy. The whole Brady Belichick era seems like it was like 50 years ago, doesn't it? Like, it's weird. Yeah. It's like, it really wasn't that long ago.
It's been long enough to roast now.
Indeed, right? It just seems like, I wrote that line in a Patriots preview where it's like, that era, even though Belichick was on the sideline last year, that era seems like a million years ago. It just goes to show how fast the NFL moves at light speed.
Well, also, there was another dynasty ready to step in and distract everybody, right? Yeah, so true. Like, the Chiefs coming in and having such a mirrored coach quarterback success, I think, plays into it. All right, let's get one more interesting training camp question in. And I'm going to throw to Jory here, because she just said she's going to Pittsburgh for the first time. How much noise do you think Justin Fields is actually going to make in this quarterback competition this offseason?
Yeah, I really want to understand, like, how much is it Justin's choice / agency / ability even? Like, I just feel like even if Justin looks good, even if he looks mobile, he looks dynamic, he's more in time with the offense than maybe he was in Chicago, I don't think it'll matter, because I think that for now, this is Russ's job to lose. And so I think that if Russ struggles and Justin does well, that's when you start to have it. But like, to talk about, as we often do at the, as we're getting toward the playoffs, like Justin does not control his own destiny here. Russ controls the destiny. And then if both of them have the right alignment of the stars, then Justin has a situation. But I do think that the same way that Sam Darnold looked really good in that quick game he had for San Francisco last year, and now he's got this opportunity with Kevin O'Connell in Minnesota, I think Justin Fields can have a year this year that will allow him to be a productive starter in 2025, whether in Pittsburgh or somewhere else. But I don't think, especially during training camp, that assuming guys stay healthy, assuming Russ doesn't look crazy bad, which based off Russ's history and also based off how light training camp is, I just don't expect to happen, that Justin will have much of a chance. Frank, what do you think?
You know, I mean, the theme of the show today is two things can be true. So I'm going to kind of jump the gun on this with this conversation. On one hand, I sit there and I've said this on podcasts before when we've talked. I think about the Pittsburgh Steelers situation, and there's just no upside to starting Russell Wilson all season. Unless you're in a playoff race all year, I get it. He is not your long-term answer. The almost the worst thing that could happen is Russ has a pretty good season, and then you're like, well, what do we do? Do we pay this guy $40 million a year for the 37 years old? It just doesn't make any sense. Whereas Justin Fields provides some hope for the future. I'm not off of the Justin Fields could be a solid NFL quarterback bandwagon. I think he's got a long way to go, but I still think he shows enough that you're like, if you could just take these steps, he could be really good. And I think that the Pittsburgh Steelers would have to look at it like, Russell Wilson's on a one-year, $1.2 million deal, and he's 36 years old. What are we doing? Why, we're not beholden to this guy in any way. But having said that, there has been no drumbeat for Justin Fields challenging Russell Wilson for this job. Whether that's Justin's fault or just that the Steelers don't want to invite a quarterback controversy, so they're putting out that word. But everything from Pittsburgh Steelers beat writers all summer was, Fields isn't close. I have to trust that. I have to trust that right now, that if it's not close, I don't know that Justin Fields could really, you know, close that gap by week one and start, which I thought he could have a couple months ago. So we'll see. But I really don't think Justin Fields is going to create that much of a wave in August to where he could start week one.
See, I think, look, I'm just going to go on record and put him on the line here. I think Russ is completely washed. I don't think Russ is going to be good. And the other part of it is I'm being asked by the General Football Society to accept that Sean Payton is a genius that can get more out of quarterbacks than anybody else. So he can take Bo Nix and make him great. Okay, well, if you want me to buy that side of the article, then you also got to allow me then to turn around and say, okay, well, with this brilliant genius head coach that can get more out of a quarterback, it wasn't good enough. Now he's going to go to Arthur Smith, who has been fine. He's a very good offensive coordinator, but what do those chops look like? What does that development look like? How does that play in for us? Like, I think Justin Fields comes out, plays pretty effortlessly in this game, in this preseason, and wins the job. Like, I would be stunned if Russ is playing throughout the course of this season.
I would too. I'd be shocked if Russ makes it 18 or 17 games. Like, I just, again, what's the upside?
I think I'd say two things. One, I don't think that Russ was terrible in Denver. I think Russ and Sean Payton were such a bad personality mix that that didn't work. And so I think that Sean can do a lot with quarterbacks when he wants to. And he made very clear with Russ that he didn't want to. I think on the Justin front, I still think Justin's super talented. I still think he has a lot of upside. I think a big part of what sunk him in Chicago was the lack of talent around him, because even the best quarterbacks, unless you're Patrick Mahomes, and even then, think about the offensive line moves that they made after they lost the Super Bowl to protect Patrick Mahomes, who is the best quarterback in the game right now. I think that if you are to say, well, Justin didn't have the talent around him in Chicago to do what he needed to do, so now let's give him another chance, I don't think he has the talent around him now in Pittsburgh, particularly on offense. So I struggle to see how he is going to be able to get there. And I think also, if the Steelers are so set on they saw enough in Russ to acquire him and to let him take the tent pole, as Omar Khan likes to say, in the starting position, I don't think they're going to be able to see enough in training camp to disprove themselves. In the season, perhaps, but in training camp, I don't think so.
I think it's going to rear its ugly head throughout the course of the year, though. We do take Mike Tomlin and his ability to handle wild chaos almost for granted, so I'm sure he'll figure out the right solution. Okay, see how we just did that? Frank teased it a little bit. We told you two things can be true at once. When we come back, we're going to run through some of the biggest storylines in the NFL, but instead of yelling at each other like we're on a bad TV show, we're going to tell you why maybe both sides are actually kind of right on a lot of these topics. We'll do that next.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
If you're waking up feeling like you could use a few more hours of sleep, the problem might be right underneath you. Better quality sleep comes with a better quality bed. And the Sleep Number Smart Bed uniquely contours to your head, neck, and shoulders for a more comfortable sleep. It's a total game changer. All night long, you can count on your Sleep Number Smart Bed to automatically respond and adjust to your movements so that you can sleep comfortably all night long, which feels amazing after a tough workout. You can even get personalized insights about your sleeping habits to help you sleep better. It's like having a coach for your best sleep. And now during Sleep Number's biggest sale of the year, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed, plus special financing for a limited time. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com. Sleep Number, official sleep and wellness partner of the NFL. See store for details.
I love the concept of two things can be true. Like when I worked at ESPN, I always said the reason the show was called First Take, it wasn't called First Nuanced Conversation, right? Like that's not the name of the show. On these shows, we like to take a look at it and be like, hey, maybe the truth lies somewhere in the middle. So we thought, based on something that Jory sort of lives on all the time, a flag she has planted, a pillar in the way she does her business. Two things can be true. Like in the South, we like to call that Mike could. Somebody's like, hey, can we get this done today? Like, I don't know, Mike could. Like two, then maybe, you know. So we're taking the maybe two things can be true on all of these things. So let's start with the world champion Kansas City Chiefs. And I'm just going to, Jory, I'm going to pose to you two different angles of this and you tell me how they can both be true. How is it possible that the Chiefs could be better this season than they were last year, but then also the Chiefs will not three-peat?
Yeah, I think before I get to the answer, I just want to say I'm pumped we're doing this segment. I hope it's a segment we keep. Last week, we were on a call with one of our bosses, Matt Efford, and he said that when you think about segments, think about your verbal tics, think about things that you say all the time. And I'm like, immediately, I just put in my notes, like two things can be true. Both of these things can be true because I feel like what drives me crazy in a lot of sports talk, and maybe I'm just, I don't know, not cut out for it because a lot of people like it, is these, well, this is the answer. Almost never is that the case. There's usually room for nuance almost everywhere. So yes, I totally agree. And I think from the Chiefs standpoint, the offense like has to be better, right? Remember how bad the offense was last year? Remember how much it struggled? Remember how Mahomes didn't have anyone to throw to? Like, I know that they've had a gazillion off-field issues this offseason. I still think with Xavier Worthy that should be better. I still think that Andy Reid's going to be like, oh, here's where I wasn't 100% last year in my scheme. And I think the defense should be really good. Like, yes, they lost L'Jarius Sneed, but also they got Chris Jones back. They've got enough of that foundation of the defense that I think that they should be a more balanced team. And it's so funny going back to what Brady and the Patriots did is the number of times they'd be like September, October, and they'd be like, ooh, that doesn't look good. Like, did they finally lose it? Did they finally go off a trail? And then late December, they start rounding into form. January, they're looking really good. And what do you know? They're hoisting another Lombardi in February. I feel like we could see that. Now, I will say, even so, a lot of times it wasn't quite to the Lombardi for Brady. It was more like, oh, conference championship. So I do think that Mahomes is going to go to another conference championship. The guy literally has never not made it to the AFC championship in the years he started. But wow, there's so much variability in the game. And I remember talking to a general manager a few years ago who said, hey, yeah, if we were basketball, if we were 4 out of 7, then the best roster wins. But this game is so much of a game of variability because – let's say you're going to win 4 out of 7 times. You have one game in NFL playoffs. And so to make it to the Super Bowl, much less win it, requires health, requires luck, and requires more than just talent. And so this good team, probably not going to win the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I will say, Jory, this is the answer. No, I didn't. You know, you just,
I know.
You hate that. So I was,
you guys are good at the takes. I'm just like never convinced enough in a single take to want to go out on a limb for it.
No, I agree with everything you said, and mostly that, if you're giving me the field versus the Chiefs, I'm going to take the field every time. And it's, oh, how can you bet against Patrick Mahomes? Well, I did 4 times last year in the playoffs. Didn't work out well, but it just goes to show that this Chiefs team wasn't really good last year. It was fine. They were good. I shouldn't say they were good. They were good. They were not great until they had to be great, really, in the Super Bowl and the AFC Championship game and all that. It's one of those that there's, like you said, so many variables in the game, and there's so many teams that I think have improved in the AFC. I think the AFC is really, really deep again. And to go through the gauntlet of the Bills, the Jets, maybe the Dolphins, I think the Browns are going to be really good. The Bengals, who Fitz have talked about a lot. The Ravens are still around. Who knows? The Texans might be the next Chiefs, for all we know. I mean, C.J. Stroud was that good that you can have that conversation. It's just hard. There's a reason no team has ever won three Super Bowls in a row. And it's just because in a single game elimination, it's hard. I think the Chiefs are much better this year. I think they figured out the receiver room. I think Rashee Rice at some point is going to play football this year after a suspension, which is inevitable. I think the defense is good. I just think, as weird as it sounds to say about the Chiefs, I think they're more confident too. They say, look, we had our issues last year. We still won a Super Bowl. Nothing's going to stop us. So I do think on paper, the Chiefs are better, but I don't know. It's just hard. It's hard to do this year after year where you never get tripped up. You never have a bad day. The Bills have been one of the best teams of football, but they just happen to have a bad day or make the wrong decision with 13 seconds left and don't squib kick it or whatever it is.
Just outside.
Yeah. Or kick goes just outside or, you know, I mean, all these different things that can happen in the NFL postseason have just not happened to the Chiefs. Credit to them. They've earned their breaks. I get that. But I don't know. Again, give me the field against the Chiefs. I'll take the field every time. I think any reasonable person who knows the odds and all that would.
I think part of this, though, comes to, because you're right, everything you guys just said is really smart and well broken down. For me, it's that number, and I don't remember what the exact record is, but if my memory serves me correctly, Patrick Mahomes has lost three games in his entire career by more than one score. I think that's what we were running with last year. So you think about close games and wherever that number lies. Like, again, Frank and I, as dabblers in the art of gambling, will tell you the number of times you'll sit there and watch somebody, and you know, even if you're betting on flipping a coin and it comes up heads five times in a row, there's going to be a whole group of people that say, well, now it's got to come up tails because it's been heads five times in a row. Or there's going to be a whole group of people that's like, well, it's been heads every time. But the reality of it is every single time you got a 50-50 chance. Anytime somebody sat at the roulette wheel and they look up, I was sitting at roulette in Cincinnati like 2 months ago. And the guy that walks up to the table, he's like, 31's hot. And the dealer looks at him, is like, every single roll, the odds are the same that you're going to get one of these numbers. No number can actually be hot. Like, there is some element to me of, if you've spent your whole life winning close games, that's part of what makes you incredible. But that's part of why I look at it and say, man, it only takes one weird day for you to not win a Super Bowl. Like, it takes one off day where Burrow finds a way to get through. And all of a sudden, you don't win a Super Bowl. So I agree. I think they are going to be better, but it's just such a crapshoot to win that game.
You think of some of the games, like, I mean, with James Bradbury doesn't get a holding penalty in that, and the Eagles get the ball back, or San Francisco doesn't have a punt bounce off of one of their blockers, and the Chiefs are caught. Like, and I'm not saying the Chiefs are lucky, but they have gotten some breaks. I mean,
better to be lucky than good, Frank.
Helps to have Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes. I get it, but the roulette ball's fallen on 31 for them a lot. Let's put it that
right.
way.
Like, and also, let's think about it. The likelihood that Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce and Chris Jones always stay healthy. I get that Mahomes has done a lot, even with ankle injuries through the years, so you can make that counter argument. And I hope that no one gets hurt ever, but they play a violent game where sometimes people get hurt. If any of them suffers even a medium level serious injury, do y'all feel as confident about their ability to close out and make those moments and the plays in the last minute?
Right. And no. Mahomes, I was there when Mahomes' knee was on the side of his leg in Denver when he dislocated his knee. And that could have been a season ender. And it was like, oh, no, he's Patrick Mahomes. He's Superman. He's going to be fine.
It'll be a week.
You're right, Jory. Like, injury luck factors into this, too. Sometimes the Miami Dolphins last year caught a ton of injuries at the end of the season and didn't finish the way they wanted to. What if all their pass rushers stay healthy? It might be a different story. Right. We don't know. But yes, a lot needs to go right to win a Super Bowl for any team, even the great Kansas City Chiefs.
And look, nobody thought that Mike Tyson would ever lose, and then Buster Douglas came along. It only takes one day. So, you know, always take the field. Let's look at another big training camp story. It's about Trevor Lawrence. So I'm going to give you, Jory, the two sides of it. You explained to me how they can both be true. Trevor Lawrence is overpaid, and the Jaguars had to pay Trevor Lawrence.
All right. When you think about the Jaguars, like, even forgetting all the advanced analytics, like a casual fan or a fan of football, but who's not watching every single game of teams that aren't their own, it's like, what do the Jaguars have going for them? The answer is Trevor Lawrence. They need Trevor Lawrence if they want any chance of turning this down. Like, think about the generational prospect he is. Think about what he's done in parts of his career. Now, again, they kind of screwed him by giving him Urban Meyer the first year. He's had injuries. There have been different things. I think the funny thing is, it can be true that you need a guy and he's overpaid. I'm actually not sure I agree with this one. The reason being, that overpaid is such a loaded term when it comes to contracts in the NFL, because if you're saying he's overpaid because he is making more than guys who have done more than him statistically in the playoffs, won a Super Bowl, all of that, yes, I agree. I also think that if you want premium positions, almost every agent and player are only going to take market value. And so I think it's hard to say just overpaid because you are what the market says you're worth, and the market says he's worth this.
That's very fair. You're right, because worth is only what someone is willing to pay you. And the Jaguars were willing to pay him $55 million a year. And if Trevor Lawrence hit the open market, he probably gets even more than that because quarterbacks just don't hit the open market. But I think in terms of just discussing what he's done in his NFL career versus what he's paid, now it's like, the Jaguars are betting on potential here. And I get it. Look, there are people out there that will just die on the hill that Trevor Lawrence is a great quarterback and the Jaguars have just done him wrong. And they might be right. Like, you see it sometimes. Once in a while, Trevor Lawrence will make a play, or he'll even have a few game stretch where he looks like the Trevor Lawrence we all thought he would be. But he has been nowhere near worth $55 million a year based on what he's done. But what are the Jaguars going to do? I mean, they were up against it because he's coming pretty much close to the end of his rookie deal. If Trevor Lawrence goes out and wins an MVP this year, which he could, that's on the range of possibilities, Trevor Lawrence, all of a sudden you're talking about adding zeros onto that contract. Like, all of a sudden it's not $55 million a year, it's $65 million a year. The Jaguars didn't want to get into that. They know they need to bet on him being great. Like, he was the guy everybody was excited for. They had no choice. They're not going to try to play the franchise tag game with him and lose him. They had to pay him, even though the price tag has nothing to do with what he's actually done on the field yet. It's just based on, well, he plays, like you said, Jory, a premium position. This is what the cost is. We kind of got to pay it and hope that Trevor Lawrence becomes what we hoped he would become.
Okay, so one of the isms I use a lot when we talk about phrases is context matters. The problem is, I think right now, there's so much context around Trevor Lawrence that we're still assigning the Clemson context to who he's been in Jacksonville. And because we all know how good he can be, people look at it and they want to say, yeah, but about some of the failings. Like, I think it's funny that guys like Justin Herbert are constantly praised for whatever they've done, but guys like Dak that go out and put out bigger numbers are constantly trashed. It all has to do with the benefit of the doubt. So, like, because Trevor Lawrence came in as this undeniable prospect, then, of course, everyone wants to make excuses for it. Do I think he's overpaid? Probably in the grand scheme of things, but there's four words on why they had to pay him: Aiden O'Connell and Gardner Minshew. Like, sometimes you're like, I'm going to press, that's four words because O'Connell, I used and in the middle. O'Connell, Gardner Minshew. There we go, Joy. Like, what you don't want to do is wake
nerdy
up one day.
Nerdy band person over here does not agree with your count of four.
Four-ish. No, but like, I'm a musician. I can only count to four. Like, the funny thing is, sometimes you look at it and say, well, he's not really worth that money. Okay, you want to roll the dice again? You want to go see if you can draft the next Zach Wilson? Or do you just want to wake up one day and realize that you got Aiden and Gardner in your quarterback room? Like, I just think we have to remember that when you are in the have-nots of the quarterback conversation, you are actually done. There is nothing you can do to win football games. So even if you have to pay a premium to somebody that might not be top five, you got to pay them like they're top five. I don't care, because it's better than going back to the well and hoping that somehow you can find a Trevor Lawrence. So I do think both things can be true. Let's do another one here. How about Arizona? All right, Frank, Arizona will be the NFL's most exciting team. The Cardinals will not make the playoffs. How?
No, this is one of my pet things after doing the previews of, I think the Arizona Cardinals might be the NFL's most interesting, exciting team. They are going to play a million 38 to 35 games this year. That defense is going to be bad. I'm sorry, Jonathan Gannon. I know you're a good defensive coach, but you have nothing on that side of the ball. Whereas the offense, Kyler was great at the end of last year. And I've been down on Kyler at times in his career. Kyler Murray might have played the best football of his career in the last month last year after he came back from the ACL. You add Marvin Harrison to that mix. You add, you know, Trey Benson, a running back they drafted, who's going to be a really, really nice complement to James Conner. I could see the Arizona Cardinals being among the league leaders in points scored and absolutely being the league leader in points allowed. They're going to have so many games that are just must-watch TV. They might play, of the top 10 games of the regular season this year, they might end up playing three or four of them, maybe even more, because they're just going to be so back and forth, interesting, but I just don't see them being good enough on the defensive side to make the playoffs. And especially that I think that division's still pretty tough. I'm higher on Seattle than most. The Rams aren't going anywhere. San Francisco. I just think this team is going to be so fun to watch, but yet at the end of the day, they're going to be like 5-12.
Frank, I love that you added this one to our list, because when you put this, I was like, what direction is he going here? Like, what is this man thinking? And I do agree with you on offense. Like, Drew Petzing, I think, did a lot of great things last year with mixed amount of talents, particularly with Kyler coming back in the middle of the season. Sort of think about what he can do with that scheme. Marvin Harrison Jr. in the mix. And then on top of that, a healthy Kyler who's 2 years instead of 1 year removed from that injury, I think is great. I didn't even think about the defense as why they wouldn't make the playoffs. I just think that if you have Sean McVay and Kyle Shanahan in your division, and by the way, Mike McDonald in Seattle is not going to make things any easier for you, that you're kind of screwed winning those six games. And then you also have the rest of your probably tough schedule. And so for me, I think that it's less that I feel strongly about their defense not being there. I don't have a take on that yet. I do think that to make it out of that division to the playoffs, you are the fourth best team in that division, even if you're one of the better ones compared to other divisions in the conference.
Yeah, absolutely. Real quick, Fitz, before I throw it to you, as we dabble, Kyler Murray to lead the NFL in passing yards this year. I'm just saying he's going to be throwing 50 times a game because they're going to be trailing 21-3 in the first half of a lot of games. I'm just saying that's all I'm doing right here.
I saw an article the other day, again, for the dabblers about the number of the most bet futures right now in the NFL. And it was all over win totals for like a dozen different teams. Like, man, fans are so optimistic at this time of the year. Oh, yeah. They all think everybody's going to go over their win totals on.
Dude, as somebody who does previews, I can tell you that every team's fan base be like, how dare you say the Tennessee Titans won't be good this year? We have this and this. I'm like, yeah, okay. All right.
I'm going to get on a soapbox for a minute about that. Like, why do people care so much? I mean, my whole thing is like, look, there is no wiggle room. Like I've said for years, I think debates like LeBron versus Michael Jordan is the grown-up equivalent of my dad can beat up your dad. Can't prove any of it. But like a preseason preview is provable. At the end of the year, you're going to know if the guy was right or wrong. So just shut up and watch your team. See if they win games. And if they like, if your team goes out and wins 12 and I told you they were going to win 8, come at me. But when I say they're going to win 8 and then you spend 2 or 3 days telling me that I'm an idiot and I've never watched your team play, I'm like, that's a lot of energy when we don't know how that's going to play out. Like, Mike could, you might be right. I might be right. We don't even know yet, Frank.
By the way, Fitz, my favorite story of 13 seasons writing these previews, I had the Raiders dead last 1 year, whatever year it was and I got an email back when we used to have the Shutdown Corner email. And it was, I swear to God, it was about 800 words. Just explain to me why I'm so wrong about the Raiders. You've never watched my team and blah, blah, blah. Again, they have 32. So there's a lot that he's just unloading on me. Right. And I reply, I'm like, well, where do you think they should have been ranked? And he replies, well, they should have been no lower than 31. Like, what are we talking about here? Like, what? You really spent an hour of your day writing me about how I was so wrong about the Las Vegas Raiders, at the time the Oakland Raiders, when I should have had them as the second worst team of football instead of the worst. But that's why this time of year is awesome, because of everybody's fired up. Everybody's excited.
If I ever get carpal tunnel, it'll be from reading previews of power rankings where I just got to scroll all the way down to find the Raiders. Like it's never at the top. Like you never just get one
okay,
mini
but better
scroll.
The scroll than when you have to click to a new page. Remember how I used to do that all the time when it was like everyone wanted their clicks. It'd be like slide 32, show, next page, 31, next page, wait for it to load, 30.
Which is extra agony when it's your favorite team, because while it's loading, you're like, son of a biscuit, how did we get here?
Oh, all wait, right. We have a 10-second ad before we get to 29.
All right, let's take a look at another one. I'm going to throw this to Frank first, because this is like two things can be true. This is the hot take version of that. These are two hot takes that maybe both can be true. The Eagles could win the Super Bowl, or the Eagles could fire their coach by Halloween. Frank, what say you?
Hoo-wee. I just posted the Eagles preview today, and it was a roller coaster. I mean, there is no team that I'm more confused about than the Philadelphia Eagles, in that this team was at a stretch of 31 games where they won 26 of them, going back to the beginning of the 2022 season. They were 26-5, including a loss in the Super Bowl there. That includes playoffs. Then suddenly, without any warning whatsoever, they become one of the five worst teams of football. And I just can't shake that, where the Eagles look so bad. This was not just the Bills early last season where they're losing a lot of close games and their record wasn't good. This was a team that was blowing 21-6 leads to the Arizona Cardinals at home. Like stuff like that. Getting absolutely boat raced by the Buccaneers in the playoffs. Like, I don't know how to reconcile this.
Cardinals like that most excited team in 2024.
They're very exciting that game. That was a great game. But I just don't know where I am with the Eagles. I look at their roster and I'm like, this is still the same roster we gushed about all offseason last year. But it's still the same coaching staff, not the same coaching staff, it's the same head coach, and a lot of the same issues that I don't know necessarily were resolved. Nick Sirianni basically gave up all control. Kellen Moore's going to run the offense. Vic Fangio's going to run the defense. He's just kind of a CEO now. And once you start doing that, and once you start firing coordinators, there's only one more move to make, and that's getting rid of the head coach. So Sirianni comes into the season. He's a lame duck. If this team is 2-6 by Halloween, he's getting fired. Like, that's just how it is. And then Kellen Moore or Vic Fangio will take over. So I don't know what to make of the Eagles. I think all these things could be true, that they have Super Bowl upside and they have the ability to be the first team fire their head coach.
Yeah, I was in Tampa for the Eagles playoff loss to the Buccaneers, and that locker room concerned me, not because everyone was crying and this and that, but because there just seemed to be so many people who were not on the same page, who were not on the same page whether they supported Nick Sirianni, who were not on the same page of whether Jalen Hurts was going to be the guy. Like, I can see them going on to win the Super Bowl if they can figure it out together. If Jalen goes off and has a year like he did 2 years ago, I think that will really spark the team. But going back to what you said, Frank, players see what happens when the organization makes changes. And while last year they did have two new coordinators that influenced them, that was two new coordinators because the coordinators were getting head coaching jobs because they had made it to a Super Bowl. To know, hey, neither our offense nor defense were good enough last year. We have two new guys, and so we have this learning curve and also this sort of morale hit. I think that can be really, really difficult to rebound from. And so I think Nick Sirianni will have earned his extension if they are able to turn this around. But I think that you just have a lot of questions, and you always have general manager Howie Roseman looming in the background being like, I gave you this. I also, Saquon's an awesome person and his ceiling as a player, really, really high. But I think there's a reason why no one else in the league is paying running backs what the Eagles just decided to pay Saquon. I mean, I don't know if you guys are watching the Hard Knocks for the Giants, and I actually don't watch all of these documentary things, but this Giants Hard Knocks is really impressing me with the level of access and like actual interesting content really that they're getting. And you saw some of what they're seeing with Saquon and what the Giants decisions were going to be, particularly sending him or not sending him, but allowing him to leave to a division rival. And again, one of the things that Joe Shane talked about on that episode was, hey, well, what could Saquon do with an offensive line like what they have in, I think it was Detroit and Philly were the two. He said, well, is the offensive line in Philly what it used to be? Like, yes, they still have talent. Yes, they still have the best offensive line coach in the league. But losing Jason Kelce is a really big deal for Jalen Hurts. So I just think there are so many question marks, whereas a year ago it was like, yeah, it makes sense that they should be a favorite again. This year, there's so much up in the air.
But you'd agree, Jory, you'd agree that this team could win a Super Bowl. Like, there's...
Yeah.
Yeah, right? Like, I mean, you look at their roster.
They still have insane amounts of talent. Right. Because on the other hand, let's say Saquon stays healthy, and then you have the Saquon, Jalen. Well, Jalen's got the mobility that plays really well off the running game. Both of them can play off the offensive line. Oh, by the way, A.J. Brown, Devonta Smith, it's still unclear how Howie is paying all of these guys. And by the way, even though I gave him a hard time about paying a running back, if you actually look at the cap numbers, I have no clue when they're paying Saquon because it's not hitting the cap this year, let me tell you that. But yeah, I think both sides of the ball still have a lot, but then I'm like, no, Jason Kelce, Brandon Graham's in his final year. Like,
Fletcher Cox retired.
Right, Fletcher Cox retired. There's a lot going on. Fitz, what do you think about the Eagles?
So here's the thing. I think the Eagles, pull up a chair, kids. I think the Eagles are a cautionary tale. That's our listeners. I'm talking to our listeners. But by the way, I mean, Jory, not for nothing. I am old enough to be your dad, so I'm allowed to say these things.
Guys, I got old this week.
How old did you get?
30.
Well,
whatever. Anyway.
It's close on being, I mean, it's close
on
being
a real adult now.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Congratulations. Yeah, sure. Welcome. By the way, my 30s were great. My 40s have been even better. Here's the thing.
Frank, anything to say about your 50s or 60s? Just kidding.
No. Oh my God. Hey. I do have a 20-year-old daughter. So, hey, whatever. Turning 30. Yeah. You're really old there, Jory. Whatever.
Carry on.
I think there's a cautionary tale out there, kids. For the Houston Texans with the Philadelphia Eagles, because we were so convinced that the Texans or that the Eagles, I should say, had built something that was about to become a juggernaut and it was about to take over, and Jalen Hurts was the answer. And oh my God, look at how good this is and look at the vibe. Everybody talked about how that team was so special a couple of years ago. The defensive line was great. Like, they had all of these things that you were like, these are building blocks. Eagles are going to be good for a long time. And now it just feels like the whole thing is in disarray. Like, I think right now Jalen Hurts is actually being doubted by most of the general NFL public. And that's wild to me, because a year ago it was, oh my God, Philly fans would have just absolutely eviscerated you for saying anything negative about Jalen Hurts. So I do think that, like, this is a reminder for everybody right now that's sitting here saying the Texans could end up being the second best team in the AFC. Well, it's a little bit of an Eagles MVP thing to me.
Changes fast.
I think we moved the goalposts too much when they were really good a couple of years ago. And now they got to find a way to normalize it. I don't think they're a Super Bowl team. I think they have a lot to fix on the defensive side of the ball. And I think the Kelce subtraction is going to be massive for them. So I don't think they're a Super Bowl team. I think they're a heck of a lot closer to watching their head coach get fired at Halloween than they are to actually hoisting the Lombardi trophy.
I'm about to get really meta and give you a two things can be true about our two things can be true. Two things can be true. You are correct that there's that much change in the NFL at all times and nothing is as stable and like continuous as we think. I also do not agree with your comparison of Jalen Hurts and the Eagles to CJ Stroud and the Texans, because the Eagles are on their third offensive coordinator and third defense coordinator in 3 years, and the Texans have not yet lost them. So I think your comparison would make more sense next year if they lose their guys. But they kept their coaches, and so I think they still have the stability and only added, didn't lose, to who they have in their building to go chase it.
That is a very fair point, and I think you are very right about that. Certainly a difference. Look at us. Like, we're having – like, what is this kid – we need to coin this as a new, like, debate show. Like, what is it if everybody's
true. Everything is awesome.
It's like, yeah. I don't know how do we term this, but it's absolutely beautiful the way it's going down. Let's get one more in before we get out of here. I will throw this one in because I threw this one in. I think – two things can be true. I think Jim Harbaugh was a great hire by the Chargers. I also think the Chargers are going to suck this year. And like so the reason I say this is because everybody says, well, look at Harbaugh's immediate success that he's always had. Okay, fine. Like, but for 1 second, let's sit down, shut up, and color in our books and acknowledge the fact that he wasn't playing against Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes. Like, he at best has the second best quarterback in his own division, and he at best is the second best head coach in his own division. So it's not this glorious, easy path for him. And then the other part of it is, I just think it takes a minute, and Frank and I have talked a lot about this, to establish culture. Like, new coaches come in, they tell you all the right things the first year, and then they rip the whole thing apart and they start rebuilding the roster. It's what John Gruden did in Vegas. It's what Sean Payton has done in Denver all the way back in Washington. Joe Gibbs did it back in the day. Like, when huge coaches come in, they spend a year and then they realize this all needs to change. So I think Harbaugh is a great hire. And I think in 3 or 4 years, the Chargers are going to be consistently just battling it out with the Chiefs. I just don't think that this is a 1 year fix for me, Frank.
Yeah, I don't either. I'm with you here. I on everything. Jim Harbaugh has won everywhere he's gone. And I think the people look at the 49ers when he joined them. They went 13-3 his first year there. They went to an NFC championship game. But that team was set up so well to be successful right away. They had so many star players, and Harbaugh did a great job. Not taking anything away from him, but I don't think his Chargers team is really set up for that. They had a lot of salary cap issues they had to work through. The receiver room still isn't that good. They want to be a run-first team, and they don't have much at running back. Like, stuff like that is just, it's going to take a while for the Chargers. I'm still not, I'm lower on Justin Herbert than literally everybody else on earth, so that's fine too. I don't think that this is some, look, they're talk about dabbling. They're over under win total this year. I believe it's 8.5. I can't get them to 9. I don't know how they would. Like, I just don't think Harbaugh is that much of a magician. Let's not forget, it took him a long time in Michigan to get to the point where they were at the end. Yeah, they were good right away. 10-3 his first year there, blah, blah, blah. But they weren't elite until right at the end. And I could see something similar happening where it just takes a little bit of time for everything to click. Him to get his guys in there, I think, is the most important thing. And them to kind of clean up some of the salary cap mess that was left behind. I don't think the Chargers are going to be very good this season. I think they lose double-digit games. But that doesn't mean Harbaugh hire was bad or it's a failure or anything like that. He will have them very good, just not this year.
I agree that Harbaugh was a great hire. I agree that they're not going to fix him this year. What I can't decide is whether Harbaugh will eventually get them there. Like, I'm more religious than superstitious, but I still just like, do you really believe that the Chargers can get there, that there isn't this curse? I mean, like, the Chargers, the Jets, maybe if the Jets win it all this year that we're going to be able to, like, break that. But I think even if Harbaugh is great, like something always happens to the Chargers.
Yeah, I'm the guy picking a Lions-Browns Super Bowl this year, I think. So I may not believe in the whole superstition thing, I guess. I don't know. Whatever.
Look, I appreciate the chutzpah of picking that particular Super Bowl. I don't think I could do that, my friend. Look, I think you're kind of right. I'm not superstitious. I'm just a little stitious. And I think there's some portion of me that looks at the Chargers and it's the injury bug every year or just something falls apart. And it's like
it just doesn't mesh together.
Ever. And so I do think that there's a little bit of I'll believe it when I see it, you know, from generations, because certainly they had the talent when they had Phillip Rivers, and they had the talent when they had Drew Brees at the quarterback, and they had the talent when they had Dan Fouts as their quarterback. Like they've always had, and not always, but for the most part, they've been talented. It's never about that. Like if we were playing the video game version, the Chargers are a great pick. They're just not a great pick. Speaking of video games, Jory, you're out on the EA college football video game. I'm not even going to ask you. You're going to be like, what's a video game system?
Okay, C-Mac tweeted about it this week. And I was like, I don't know what, about 12 years, 11 years. Like, what is he talking about? And then he texted something about it. And I'm like, oh, this explains your tweet. Got it.
Wait, is he playing it? He hasn't hit me up. Like, I want people to play with online.
You should. I mean, and Patrick Mahomes brought a TV for that in the Olympics.
I know.
So
I mean, I'm going to do this weekend. I'm just going to hunker down and I'm going to start a UNLV dynasty. Frank, are we picking up the sticks and figuring out again how to manage a PS5?
You know, I've been more of a NBA 2K guy in the time I do have to play video games, but I might have to do this. We might have to figure this out because I've never seen buzz like this for a video game. College football is awesome in the video game setting because you can run different offenses and you have the different teams and stadiums and stuff like that. So I might have to get on board with this because I don't have it yet because it sounds stupid. I've been writing previews. I don't have time to play video games. I've been writing the Houston Texans preview all day. So I might have to get on this. I've heard nothing but good things about this game.
Jory, I'm going to need you to let C-Rob know that I'm hurt that he hasn't asked me to play. Or C-Mac. Oh. Oh,
I think C-Rob's probably playing too, but you'd have to check with him.
No, it's fine. It's fine. You know
have what? Have you reached out to the MFITs? I'd like to note that friendship is a two-way street.
No, I haven't. No, you know what? You know what I'm going to do tonight? I'm going to reach out to both of them individually. I'm just going to be like, hey, man, I hope you're having a great day. That's it. That's all I'm going to say. I just hope you're having a great day.
A little passive aggressive. Why not? By the way, real quick, Tecmo Super Bowl, greatest video game of all time. I'll die on that hill. That was...
Jory, even you would like
old enough to know, like, oh my god, wow. Like that was the game changer of all game changers.
But you had to write down the code. Like this is how, like back then, after you won a game, it would put up like a 30-digit code on the screen, and you'd have to write the code on a piece of paper because the next time they didn't have a way to save the video game. So next time when you came in, you'd be like, enter a code, and that would tell the algorithm how to bring up where it was at the time. Like it's wild. You couldn't even save a game in the middle of it back then,
dude. Now you play NBA 2K at like whatever old Bulls team you take, Jordan is wearing the Jordans he wore that season, like in 1996 or whatever. He's wearing Jordan 11s. If you would have showed 15-year-old me this, it just blew my mind. There's no way.
All right, I'm going to get 2K, and then we'll play that online too, even though you never have time. Follow us on Twitter, at Jason Fitz, at Yahoo Schwab, at Jory Epstein, and then feel free to tell us if you want to play one of us in any of the college football
games.
Exactly,
also, one of us, you get to choose who.
Yeah, well, no, you can choose. I didn't choose say anybody would it. Yeah, that's fair. And then our producer, John Gennaro, doing great work behind the scenes, obviously. Again, don't forget, everything's about to change on the feed. Don't be surprised by it. Zero Blitz is going to roll into inside coverage. So after today, when you look here, you're going to see everything in this feed, but you'll also be able to get to each show. And stick with Yahoo Sports. We got some huge announcements coming up on podcasts that you are absolutely going to freak out for this summer, or this fall, I should say, starting with football season. So be sure to check us out. Rate it, subscribe, tell your friends, your family, your enemies. Thanks for hanging out with us. We'll see you next week.